Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. This is Lenny Lawson from the studio in my office at Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan. I'm actually on the Ford side. They wouldn't let me have an office on the Nissan side. I had too much stuff. And most of the offices are surrounded with glass. You wouldn't want that for my office because, yeah, it's full. It's full of stuff, memorabilia and things like that. But that's just who I am in these old days. I am a nostalgia person. I like to have old stuff around me. We've talked about that. I can see Tonka toys from my youth, my 1968 Apple Crate bicycle, pictures and books and old telephones. I got one of those phones that they used back in the day where you picked it up. I can't remember exactly what they're called, but you know, it has the little horn, the handle that you hold to your ear, and then you put the mouthpiece to your mouth and call Clara. She's the switchboard operator at Mayberry. I think it was. But anyway, that's where we are today in my office, and we're talking about the market and what happened in the last month. The sales were off nationwide about 27%. That's a pretty big drop. The chip shortage is really showing its ugly side right now. Everybody is hurting. I think General Motors has done better. I was checking inventories around on Tri-Cities. You know, you can go around and see how many cars people have. All you have to do is go to their website, click on new vehicles, and somewhere near the top it'll show you how many they have to choose from. And it was interesting to see one of the largest Ford dealers in the Tri-Cities has 12 Fords in stock. You know, normally they would probably have 200 in stock, 250 maybe. We would have 120 to 140 in stock. We've got, 39. So we're in better shape than a lot of them are. Looking at Chevy dealers, though, are better off. I didn't check other GM dealers. So the largest GM or Chevrolet dealer in the, Upper East Tennessee has 119 in stock. I didn't look to see what they were. You know, they may not be the good stuff. You know, when I say the good stuff, we're talking trucks and SUVs. Primarily, that's the good stuff. Cars are selling, though. We do pretty well. You know, Ford made the decision to eliminate cars, everything except the Mustang. I was concerned about that. Still am to a certain degree, but that's why I'm also a Nissan dealer, because Nissan said, we'll sell cars. So they decided to retain everything from the Versa to the... I don't know what they're going to do with the Maxima, but we have the Versa, the Sentra, the Altima, and the Maxima is yet to be determined. I don't know if they're going to spend the money it's going to take to redo that car. I know they're coming out with the new Z car, and somebody said they saw one in the Tri-Cities. I don't know. It's you remember the Z car, the Datsun 240Z, when it came out? I think it came out in 1970. That was the first one. Overseas, they call it kind of a weird name, Fair Lady. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it, you know, it is kind of an odd name for a, you know, kind of a sport car, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe that's being sexist on my part. But they do call them Fair Ladies over there. I think they still do. But over here, they call it the Z car. You know, back then it was Datsun, and Datsun came out with the 240Z, and it was kind of revolutionary. Had a long nose and a short chopped-off rear end, kind of like me. It had... you know, bucket seats, five-speed. Well, I think back then it was a four-speed, but then they eventually came with a five-speed. I've got a 280Z. That was the third generation. They went from the 240 to the 260, and then they went to fuel injection on the 280, which was a little bit problematic, but they got that sorted out. And then they said, well, let's add another letter. And so they came out with the 280ZX. And that was a new body style, basically. Built on a similar chassis, but maybe a little bit stiffer and more modern. I don't think they looked as good. You know, sometimes car makers do that. They redesign something that was perfectly good before. Now, there are companies that don't bother with that, like Porsche. You know, if you look at a, let's say a 2022 Porsche 911, you can look at that car and set a, let's say just a Porsche 356 from the 50s and set it beside it. And you say, yeah, those two are kind of related. Still rear engine. And, you know, they definitely did not mess with the formula. They tweaked it quite a bit, but they didn't mess with it. I'm looking at a 1987 right now, thinking about selling it for a gentleman. And, you know, it looks pretty much like my 2005 model. I mean, they're definitely kin. But other makers feel like they need to reinvent the wheel. I remember when Chevrolet came out with the 1973 Malibu. And, you know, I like the 70, the 69, 70, 71, and 72 Malibu just fine. They were good-looking cars, and even today, they are very, very collectible. Then Chevrolet came out with the 73 model. And I remember the first time I looked at that car, I said to my brother, they ruined that car. It's ruined, as they say around here. And they really did ruin it. Now, it sold pretty well. They stayed with that mistake for, until they basically eliminated the Malibu. They said, well, this thing isn't selling anymore, so let's drop it. Normally, that's because they made a mistake, and I think they definitely did. I remember, though, my brother and I had a Malibu S3, and do you remember those swivel bucket seats? You know, they were kind of a weird invention, so you could actually, if you're sitting in the driver's seat, you could actually pull a lever and just swing your legs around, and you're still sitting in the seat, but your legs are pointing out the door. You know, at 18 years of age, I didn't need that. I could pretty much still get out of a car. I never saw what the advantage was. I thought it was goofy. Plus, the seat would not recline. It was just fixed and really at a very upright position. But Chevrolet thought that was a great sales tool. It lasted 2 years. So not so great. But, you know, sometimes manufacturers mess things up. You know, a lot of people thought that Chevrolet in 1958 messed up. You know, they had the 55 Chevy and the 56 was a little tweaked 55. And then they came out with the 57, which had the tail fins, you know, the ones that stick straight up, vertical and stick straight out. Love the 57 body style. I'm personally more a fan of the 55. But anyway, then they came out with the 58. And it had quad headlights and they had flattened the tail fins. Chevrolet got the idea that, well, people don't want tail fins anymore. It took Chrysler a little bit longer to figure that out. They just got bigger and bigger. But then, so they flattened them, but they made them kind of bulbous looking. And, you know, they didn't sell very well. My dad said we had so many problems out of the Chevrolet Impalas and Bel Airs at that time. That was the first year for the Impala. And they didn't have the Caprice yet. You remember Chevrolet had several different models of their full-size cars. They had the Biscayne. That was the base model. And then they had the Bel Air. And then they had the Impala. And later on, they had the Caprice. Now, I don't know if they had all of those at the same time, but they just kept throwing different names at them. And, you know, and Chevrolet is one to resurrect names, just like some of the other manufacturers are. I mean, heck, Ford did it this year, right, with the Ford Maverick. You remember the Maverick from the 70s? Not a great seller. Had two-door and four-door. You know, yes, most young people, you ever heard of the Maverick car? No, never heard of that. I ask people, have you ever heard of a Corvair? You mean a Corvette? No. Corvair. No, never heard of that. I drove my Corvair around Powell's one time, and a guy stuck his head out the window and said, is that a Corvette? I said, no, not hardly. It wishes it was a Corvette. Matter of fact, I wish it was a Corvette, but it's not. This one's got the engine in the rear. Engine in the rear? I thought Volkswagens only did that. You know, some people just don't follow the cars like I do. But anyway, I started this off talking about sales a little bit, and sales are down last month, and it's the chips, and it's not just the manufacturers of chips. It's also people who manufacture other things for cars are having a hard time getting their products out of their plants and factories and stuff to the manufacturers so they can build other stuff because they have chip shortages in their plants. They can't replace equipment. They have a hard time finding workers. Still, everybody that I talk to is struggling with the worker thing. People don't want to work. Even when you do hire people, you know, they work there for 2 days and then don't show up. Didn't they learn better manners than that? Did we not teach our young people that you're supposed to call somebody and just, you know, give them a hint that you're not going to be there? Just quit like a man or a woman. Don't just walk off. I hope some of you are listening. That's not cool. That's a bad thing to do to anybody. Even if you don't like the employer, give it a shot too. Stay there a little bit longer. Stick it out. You know, you can last. Or at least, you know, give it a shot. I mean, these people work hard to hire you, and they're offering you incentives like, you know, sign-on bonuses. I would be very hesitant to offer sign-on bonuses now to this crowd that's out there. I'm sorry. Now, there's a lot of good ones, I'm sure. It's probably the 80-20 rule. You heard of that? Is that called the Pareto principle? I think it is. But 80-20 rules says that, you know, 80% of the people will do it, and or 20% of the people will do it right, and 80% won't. And, you know, that applies to a lot of things in life. Well, I'm a little long on this segment, so I'll take my first break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, I've operated a car dealership or multiple car dealerships at one time, which I wasn't really good at. I'm a lot better at running one than, you know, five. Now, you know, I've got there's people that are just good different things, right? I mean, they're like somebody that likes to sit behind a desk and crunch numbers all day long and, you know, manage spreadsheets and stuff. They're probably worth the big bucks. Where you got people like me are more of a front lines kind of a guy that likes to interact with humans and not have meetings all the time. I guess one of my downfalls is I'm such a car nut. I really like cars, and I just, you know, I used to really get into little differences in cars. I remember Dad used to take us to the openings, you know, when they were having new model announcements and stuff like that. And they would always show the factory people the cars first. And we lived in Charleston, West Virginia at the time, and that's where his office was. He was the parts and accessories zone manager for the Charleston zone of Chevrolet. And so they rented this big space. I don't know. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a big space where they could park a lot of cars on the inside. And they would make a big deal. You know, they'd cover the front ends and the taillights. And we'd go in, and then they would do this big unveiling, and everybody would scream and yell and clap and eat hors d'oeuvres and just had the best time. Of course, I'm holding on to my dad's hand, and he said, "Now, look at this. You see how this headlight is a little bit different?" No. And then, you know, I caught that bug. You know, I would start looking for the little nuance changes. And still my brother to this day, he's way better at picking out differences. He can see a, you know, like a 66 model Chevrolet front end and versus a 67. And I mean, it's just instantaneous. Well, I could do that. 67 versus 66 was pretty recognizable. But there's a lot of them that are. But he picks up all those subtleties. And I never was good at that. But, you know, the excitement about new cars coming out and everything is just not what it used to be. But see, the days back then, you know, demand was high. And this is back in the 60s, you know, when I was kind of growing up. I'm more of a child of the 70s, although I was born in 56. But I feel like I grew up in the 70s the most. But I enjoy the 60s. Don't get me wrong. Okay, I got off track again. Oh, yeah. I've never operated in an environment where the demand was so much greater than the supply. That's where we are right now. I mean, I've been doing this for 45 years, and it is just unprecedented where we are. Now, back in the 60s, it was kind of like that. It was up and down. You know, I was reading about 1962. Why would I do that? Well, I don't know. It was 60 years ago. And I was reading about all the new models. 62 was kind of a, I don't know, it was pre-Mustang, pre-Camaro. The makers were trying to figure out, where are we going to go with design? There were a lot of economic things going on, and you know, we have geopolitical turmoil right now. Would you agree with that? Whether you agree or not, we do. We had some of that going on back then. I don't know if you remember 1962, if you were around, but President Kennedy was having a little bit of a problem with a guy named Nikita Khrushchev. And those Russians, you ever heard that before, had moved a bunch of ballistic missiles to Cuba. Now, Cuba is not too far away from Florida. I think it's about 90 miles or so. But there was a lot of going back and forth with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, you know, we haven't had that. At least we don't know about any missiles that are that close to us. Of course, there's submarines probably out there that are pretty close. They're probably off the coast of Myrtle Beach right now. But anyway, also we had a lot going on with space. Vietnam was a real problem back then. You know, I remember watching television back in the 60s, and Walter Cronkite would get on there, and you know, they'd always give the how many people were killed in Vietnam that day. And, you know, it's pretty big numbers. What was it ended up being about 54,000 soldiers lost their lives there, and really affected a lot more people than that. But, you know, we were in the space race as well. I don't know that we're really in a space race right now. We're flying to the same place. I mean, the Russians, and how come we can get along with that, the space station, you know, and fly Americans up in Russian rockets and vice versa, but we can't get along down here? It's just weird. But anyway, John Glenn, remember him, Scott Carpenter, Wally Schirra, they all made successful space flights, and it was all in preparation for us to land on the moon. Folk music was really big. You know, a guy named Bob Dylan, he was big at that time. Joan Baez, Peter, Paul, and Mary. Beach Boys made waves with their new album, Surfin' Safari. The music was a little bit more innocent back then, wasn't it? There was a new show on CBS. It became wildly popular, and it was called what? The Beverly Hillbillies. That's right. Uncle Jed, first mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. Then one day he was shooting at some food, and up from the ground come a bubbling crude oil, that is Texas tea. I can't remember the rest of it, but anyway, you know, that shows you how it becomes a part of your mind. Hazel was a big show, the Red Skelton Show, and To Tell the Truth. So anyway, a lot of different things were happening. I was a big fan of the New York Knicks back then. Wilt Chamberlain was the enemy. He was playing for the Warriors, or Philadelphia Warriors at that time. They became something else later on. You believe a basketball game? Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points in a basketball game then. Warriors won against New York Knicks on March 2nd, 169 to 147. That's when they thought about raising the goal to 11 feet. But anyway, the auto industry was kind of strange. American Motors had a guy stepped down from the presidency of AMC. His name was George Romney. You ever heard of Mitt Romney? I'm sure you have. Well, George was his dad. And he decided he wanted to become governor and was tired of running a failing automobile company. And so, you know, AMC didn't last a whole lot longer than that. But if you look at the Chryslers and you look at the Fords, you know, the Falcon came out, I think, in 62. You know, you look at the Mercurys and the Buicks, and even Chevrolet with the Corvette you know, they were still hanging on to a lot of those kind of attributes from the 50s. It wasn't until 63 that things really started to change, and I think change for the better. But, you know, 62 was, like I say, a lot going on in the world just like it is right now. And let's see, where were we living in 60? I think we were living in St. Albans, West Virginia in 1962. And for me, I guess at that time, the world was no bigger than St. Albans, Nitro, where my grandparents lived. You know, it's kind of neat, though, when your world is smaller when you're a kid. The world seems too big when we get old, and I think it's because we pay so much attention to what's going on in the world that we don't have any control over, and that creates a, just an underlayer of stress. At least it does for me. I don't know if it does for you. I'm just about tired of listening to the news. I've decided when I get up in the morning, instead of saying, Alexa, play this, play the news, I'm saying, Alexa, play James Taylor. Play Cat Stevens. Play, I don't know, Don McLean. You ever heard of him? American Pie. All right, I'm going to take my last break. Be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. On Monday, I'm going to talk a little bit about how the dynamics have changed in the market. And I'm not going to talk about the chip shortage and stuff like that. I'm talking about what the expectations are. You know, if you look at the largest demographic right now for people buying cars, it's those millennials. They're the ones with the money now, and they're the ones spending it as quickly as they can. I guess I did that when I wasn't ever a millennial. I was a baby boomer, but I was that same age at one time. And, you know, I like buying stuff and saving money. That was a problem for the future. I finally came out from that fog early enough to be able to sock away a little bit, you know, in 401k and stuff like that. But, you know, you mention that to a lot of people now, and they're too busy buying boats and motorcycles and bigger houses and, you know, expensive egg grills and stuff like that. But they have certain buying attributes that we need to pay attention to as a car dealer. And I think it's something that a lot of people are wanting now because of the advent of the internet and the cell phone and all the things that people can do without shopping the way they traditionally did. Because, you know, back when I first got into business, you wanted to buy a car, you looked in a newspaper and you went shopping. You went from dealership to dealership and looking at cars and dealing with salespeople and so forth. Now, I can't tell you how many cars that we sell that the only time that we interact with the customer face-to-face is when they come to get their car. And they're coming from everywhere. I mean, we sell cars. It's just really hard to believe in that. And we're not the only dealer in East Tennessee that's selling cars to people from out of state, but we have a lot of it. And they'll drive all the way from Texas or Boston or Florida to come to Greenville, Tennessee, believe it or not, to pick up a vehicle. It is a common occurrence. I don't like it as good. I like having, you know, all the interaction with people and being able to do a good product presentation and a demo ride and do the traditional kind of a sale. But a lot of people just don't want to mess with. They don't want a new friend. You know, they just want to pick up a new car and be done with it. So we'll see what happens. But we're going to talk about some of the things that are really good. I think that millennials are demanding and that the car business needs. And maybe you'll agree with me. Again, this is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. Sorry about that. And I am in Greenville, Tennessee, Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan. And if I can help you, give me a call, 423-552-2020. That's 423-552-2020. Or you can get me online by email, if you want to, at Lenny, L-E-N-N-I-E, Lawson, 2020 at gmail.com. And we will see you Monday. Hope you have a great weekend.